I recall, of course, the period of the Vietnam War back in the 60s when I was politically radicalized, and the anger which so many of my generation felt over the atrocities being committed by the U.S. government. The daily bombing of Hanoi, Haiphong, the announcement of body counts. Hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? And the outrage over Vietnam was, of course, underlying that was not just Vietnam, but our familiarity with the fact that imperialism had been responsible for two horrifying wars in the 20th century. World War I was the war my grandparents fought. World War II was the war my parents went through. So we were aware of that, and we were, of course, exposed to the many anti-war films of that time. And we felt profound outrage over this. But outrage without perspective can be misdirected. And that was the fate of many of my generation, or misled. The great question was one of perspective, which becomes so critical. And I just want to stress, before I make a few other points, again, speaking to young people, don't, of all the false propaganda, perhaps the most misleading is the conception that this government is all powerful. They're not. Lenin once said very profoundly in response to a claim, I think it was by Kautsky, that governments are never so powerful as when wars begin. He said just the opposite is true. They're never so weak. And that is profoundly true. But of course, weakness also motivates violent actions, repression. And I am not in any way minimizing the dangers that exist. They are real and they are extreme. Trump, this government, is risking everything on this war. And they too see themselves fighting an existential conflict. But I want to emphasize, and it really occurred to me, particularly when I heard Will speak, and he evoked the traditions of Pennsylvania, which played such an enormous role in the American Revolution, the formation of committees of correspondence, the growing outrage over the actions of the equivalent of ICE of the 18th century, the British troops who were marching here and there around American towns and villages, committing acts of repression against the citizens in Pennsylvania, of course in Boston. And it seemed to those who lived through that, what could be done to stop this? The British army, the British military, the British Empire was the most powerful force in the world, against which the forces of the American colonists seemed paltry. And somehow those traditions are being reawakened. And it's important to understand that with all the political problems we face in the United States, all the problems of, you might say, political backwardness, the backwardness of the culture, the endless and relentless propagation of anti-socialism, anti-communism. Nevertheless, this is a country with profound democratic and revolutionary traditions. And in fact, these traditions, in a way which is quite unique, define what Americans see themselves as. This is a country which is extraordinarily diverse ethnically, religiously, but what underlies or the common element or foundational element of consciousness is that this is a democratic country. The great documents of American history are, of course, the Declaration of Independence, which declared in a way which had never been said before, that all men are created equal, and declared that this is self-evident at a time when everything in the world said it wasn't self-evident. But in writing that document, and I think it's important to refer to the opening passage, in writing the document, Jefferson explained that he was writing this, or the colonists were writing this document, because as he said, a decent respect for the opinions of mankind required them to explain why they had entered into revolutionary struggle. A decent respect for the opinions of mankind. Does this government show a decent respect for anyone's opinions other than that of that idiot, scoundrel, felon, Donald Trump, and his coterie of political nutcases? They have no respect for anyone. They have no respect for the American people. They have no respect for the opinion of the world. And there is another great document, which is Lincoln's second inaugural. Of course, it says in the famous concluding passages, with malice toward none, with charity for all. And then it concludes that the aim of the U.S. Republic, and he said in the last words, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. That was Lincoln. And the extraordinary place that Lincoln occupies in the collective consciousness of the American people was that he defined the fundamental ideals which motivated the revolutions of the United States. Now, Lincoln wasn't a socialism. He lived in a different historical period. And I'm not saying this so we all should get out and sing the Stars and Stripes. But these traditions mean something. And what Trump is doing and what this government is doing is profoundly offensive. It is undermining in a profound and irretrievable way how Americans understand their government, how they see it. It's not just that they disagree with policy. They see this as an alien force, something which is against them, everything they believe. And revolutions take place not only because of the immediate impact of bad conditions. Now, as Trotsky also said quite well, he said, not everyone responds the same way to an argument, but everyone responds the same way to a red-hot poker. Well, the red-hot poker is the growing economic crisis, the deterioration of conditions, growth of unemployment. But it also takes place under conditions in which there is a profound shift underway in social consciousness, the way people see this country, the way people see this regime. And it is under these conditions that a process of mass radicalization acquires a new theoretical ideological form. And here we are about to observe the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. And all at once, its implications for us and for the world become enormously important.